Monster Movie Media presents.
This is Corey Burton, the voice of the El Rey Network, and the Haunted Mansion Holidays, and of course Captain Hook, and many others. And you're listening to the Creepy Kingdom Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to episode 73 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, and let me tell you, I am back right after an amazing weekend spent at the Scare LA convention this past weekend in Pasadena, California. It was incredible. In fact, I have way too much to share for one episode. Way too much. So I'm going to be sharing it sprinkled throughout future episodes. But I have something pretty incredible for this episode to get the party started. They had a panel titled The Legend of Disneyland's Hatbox Ghost, hosted by Doug Barnes from the Season Pass podcast. Featured on the panel was Disney legend Tony Baxter, along with Imagineers Daniel Joseph, Kevin Kidney, and Jody Daly. I'm going to present that panel in its entirety in this episode. And if you are listening to this on the YouTube version, you'll see video. And if you're just listening to the audio and you want to see the video, it will be up at creepykingdom.com. It's a multi-camera video that shows all of the slides as well as the people talking. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everyone it's coming up oh so soon. Sunday, August 16th at 4:30 p.m., world premiere of the Dark Side of Disney documentary. It's taking place at the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana, California. If you live in the area or going to the D23 Expo that weekend, this is the perfect way to end that weekend. Myself, fellow Creepy Kingdom contributors Roxy Tart and Cupcake Terror appear in the film, and myself and Roxy Tart will be hosting a Q&A after the film. You can pre-order tickets at a discounted price. You can find the link on our website, creepykingdom.com, by going to the blog section or going to DSODDOC.com. So without any further ado, let's begin.
After a very brief debut in 1969, the Hatbox Ghost won into hiding, and for decades to follow became nothing short of legendary. Welcome, foolish mortals, to the swinging wake of celebrating the legend of Disneyland's Hatbox Ghost. Please welcome to the stage renowned artist and Disney fan favorite, Kevin Kidney and Jody Daly. Season Pass Podcast, Doug Barnes. actually, we're going to start this off again with Haunted Mansion, right? Wasn't that 2014 we did that? This time? Have you guys heard about that place, Disneyland, that's down the street, right? All right, good. Hatbox Ghost, how many of you know about this? Yeah. We're making geeks about that, too. So we have... Oh, I got the clicker right here. So guys, first off, Hatbox Ghost, kind of a fascination behind this character, right?
Yeah, love him.
All right, so we'll start with, we have Kevin and Jody right at the bottom here. That's their names. So, you guys, where did the fascination for the Hatbox Ghost start?
I think for both of us, it was the record album, and probably for everybody out here, too. I mean, that record album was amazing, and the Colin Campbell's pictures inside, his rendering of Mark Davis's version of the Hatbox Ghost was such a cool thing. And I think he was very mysterious because, hey, we didn't remember seeing him in the ride, so that was kind of intriguing to have him on the record. And then the other thing was just the description of him, that Thurl Ravenscroft description of this big hulking figure whose head disappears every time the bride's heart beats, you know? I just thought, oh my gosh, that is terrifying, whatever that is about, you know?
So, but you saw him in the book, too.
Yeah, the book, those paintings, I got to meet Colin Campbell, maybe 20 years ago, and that was the first thing I brought up was the Hatbox Ghost painting and how I would avoid that picture sometimes. I would just skip over that page. No, he's really scary. And I love that he's like one of the few characters that engages the audience as they go by. He's like kind of looking at everybody as opposed to everybody else who's involved in their own parties and doing all their ghostly things.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tony, we actually had this conversation about the fact that you went on Haunted Mansion before it actually opened up, and you thought you saw him there, right?
Well, I did see it. They had a wonderful thing when I was working there as a ride operator where they would call out to operations and say, you know, we need some people, volunteer bodies, to go over and test the ride. So if you're able to give us 2 hours, you have to agree you'll be on it for 2 hours. Let's see. Would I like to ride the Haunted Mansion that nobody has seen yet for 2 hours? I'll have to think about that one. So I go over there, and I'm in my street clothes, and they said, you didn't read that it was only for people that are on a work shift. You know, you have to, so I go back, and I cheat, and I put on my outfit, and then I come back, and I ride it. Now, you wouldn't know to look for the Hatbox Ghost because you're seeing this whole ride for the first time. And at that point in my life, Madame Leota and the crystal ball, that was the end-all be-all. And so, but the Hatbox was there. The other things that were very different after it opened a week later was he was gone. And there was no more Takata and Fugue playing out in the front yard, which I kind of thought that was neat.
So Jody and Kevin, can you tell everybody a little bit about, what you guys have done? You obviously constructed a replica that was out there for D23 and such?
Yeah, I think a lot of people remember that. We did a replica. Let's start actually with this. This predates all that. That little pin, that little cloisonné pin that you see down there in the corner, that was the first, as far as I know, first piece of Hatbox Ghost merchandise in the modern age after, if we're going past that record album that we all remember. It was a little Halloween pin set that we did for, Disney catalog way back when, and thought, let's do this Hatbox Ghost. I love this character. And we made the pin so that his head comes off. It's a separate pin, so you can actually take it off. Yeah, it's sort of like a pin within a pin. But anyway, that was like the first thing that kind of got us involved. And then for Disneyland's 50th, 10 years ago, we did a Big Fig figure of the Hatbox Ghost. Like, there he is. The one that's more green with all the marketing on it. That's the one we did for the catalog. And actually, it was funny. We pitched that to Disneyland, to the merchandise team there. They weren't very keen on it because they didn't know who the character was, and they said nobody would know. He's not in the ride. Why would we sell something that's not in the ride? That would be really pointless. Nobody would buy it. Let's do Madame Leota. Let's do somebody else. No, let's do this Hatbox Ghost. So we did it. Disneyland skipped on it, and we did it for the catalog only. It sold out really fast, and then Disneyland ordered some. So... So yeah, that I think that kind of got the ball rolling on Hatbox Ghost as far as being something that people knew could actually, you know, make money. And then the other figure that you see there is our replica that we made in 2009. We made it up in LA, up at our studio, and filmed it or photographed it there in our living room in our old 1920s house with a bunch of junk, some steamer trunks, and tried to make it look like the attic. That photo has been ripped off so much. I see it on so many blogs. Like, it's like become the Hatbox Ghost photo for a while, until, of course, now we have the Hatbox Ghost in the ride. But anyway, yeah, that was it.
And then this is kind of like that little head that you're holding right now.
Yeah, this is the original cast of the real head of the Hatbox Ghost from the 60s. Probably Blaine Gibson sculpted it, I'm assuming. But anyway, this replica that you're looking at on the slide right now is a little bit different than the one we did for D23. This one was commissioned by Guillermo del Toro. He was just beginning to work on the new movie and got really excited and wanted one for his Haunted Mansion room. He has a whole Haunted Mansion room. That's amazing. So we built this over about a month, and it's amazing. We finished it the night before Halloween, and I called him on October 30th and said, it's done. He's like, get it over here. So we rented a U-Haul and, you know, carted it out of our house down the street to the U-Haul, and I remember thinking, I hope the neighbors are not seeing me. It's too weird. But anyway, yeah. So this one's based, you know, if you look at those old photographs of Yale Gracie with the his mock-up version of the Hatbox Ghost, you know, the ones where he's kind of disappearing and holding the head and fussing with the Hatbox Ghost, that's not the one that you saw in the attraction. He had slightly more matted hair, and the one that was in the attraction had just black irises, big black pupils. And this guy actually has irises with little pupils. So he's a little more, I guess, maybe has more detail to him. But this is the one that Guillermo really liked and wanted us to do.
And so now that sits in his Haunted Mansion room.
That's in his Haunted Mansion room.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Well, Guillermo was, of course, really excited to do a film version of this. And it was funny. I saw his presentation at Comic-Con, and he said, Eddie Murphy, if you're listening, you're not going to be in this one. But one of the things that he was most excited about throughout that whole episode of developing it, I got to go over and see some of the early storyboards and whatnot, and he said, if you promise you won't tell, I'm going to show you these things. And he had like these little miniature sets, sort of like the Main Street Emporium windows, only there were different scenes in the Haunted Mansion. You touch a button, and you'd hear, like, at the front door of a little miniature exterior, you know, when hinges creak in doorless chambers. And then the door would open, and there was the Hatbox Ghost in miniature. And it was amazing little things. He loves animatron things. And so he had three or four of those that were all featuring this guy. And he said, I'm going to make it so important to the movie that Disneyland will have to put it back in the ride.
Well, and I think it kind of helped also build the, because this is quite an infamous character, because everybody thought that it was possibly there, but weren't quite sure. And when Guillermo started talking about it, now you have somebody who's, you know, fairly famous talking about this character, and now people want to study more, you know, into it. We actually have a video, right?
Oh, yeah. I thought you might enjoy seeing this. It's super short. I mean, we're talking 10 or 15 seconds long. It's very short. When we built that first one for D23, the first big replica, it just happened to coincide with the first D23 Expo. And there was a lot of Disneyland stuff happening that time. I think the Haunted Mansion was 40, correct, in 2009. So they had a big party. Did anybody go to the big, that nighttime party?
Okay. Got two.
It was amazing. They had a huge party, and they had a special ride on the Haunted Mansion and everything. Okay, we had a whole scheme up our sleeves for, like, the weeks leading up to it. It ultimately, unfortunately, did not get to happen for dumb reasons. But we were going to actually put our Hatbox Ghost in the Haunted Mansion as a surprise. Our replica was not rigged up to do the trick with the head disappearing and everything. It was just the figure. But we thought, who cares? It'll just be so shocking to people to go through that attic and there he is. They'll freak out.
Absolutely.
So we told Tony about it. Tony was like, we got to do this. This would be really, really cool. So we were thinking, well, it'd be really sad to just see it sitting there looking, you know, still. So at least we can animate him. So we did a little video to show how we could have animated him in the attraction for just that one night.
Absolutely.
So here it is. Look at that. It's like exactly 6 years ago today. Yeah, that's amazing. That is frightening. So yeah, he was, you know, you only see him for just a second as you go by in your Doom buggy, and we thought, well, that's enough. If he's there doing that, people will not believe it. And anyway, unfortunately, we didn't get to do it.
And you said it was like puppetry, right? It wasn't...
That's the other secret. You know, it's not an AA figure, the Hatbox Ghost really was not a true animatronic figure anyway. He kind of more or less jiggled his arm and cane and in the original. But we were going to set up a little duvetteen panel behind him and hide back there. And you know what? I was really excited about the whole prospect of being in the Haunted Mansion at night and crouched in the attic for an hour and a half.
Safety was
not.
You don't even have to be moving anything, just to sit back in there for a while.
That's right. I could have just kicked it with my foot.
So, how many people have been to Disneyland recently during the 60s? How many people have actually been to Haunted Mansion? Have you noticed a new figure in there? Good. I'm glad. They recognize your work there, Daniel.
All right. That's great.
Daniel, so, tell us a little bit about yourself, like how this all began when you were getting into the Hatbox Ghost.
Well, it was a long and arduous journey in an uphill battle pretty much along the way. Our group at Imagineering, I work in the special effects and illusions group, are big, you know, we're big legacy people to Yale Gracie. I, you know, myself grew up with Yale Gracie on the wall. He was my Michael Jordan. I was that weird. it was sort of something that was, you know, a dream for me and also a few of the other folks in the group. Over the years, a lot of Imagineers, I think probably starting in the late 90s, have been pitching different ways of bringing back the Hatbox Ghost. One of the biggest hurdles to the Hatbox Ghost illusion is the fact that you are really close to the effect. The effect has to happen over and over and over again. We like to say in our industry, you know, special effects and magic tricks on a stage, in like Las Vegas, you get one effect, you get to do a night, and then you get to reset it up for hours and then do it the next day. We have to do that basically 14 times a minute for 17 hours a day every day of the year. So it's really, really challenging to do special effects and illusions that look really magical and are also really robust and long-lasting for Disney theme parks, and therein lies the challenge and also the opportunity. So myself and a sort of a grassroots team of other Imagineers at WDI had been cooking up a few things for a few years. We did this really, really crude, again, another grassroots effort for D23 a few years ago it was an A100 figure that we stuck a head on and dressed with clothes that we found sitting around, and it was the Hatbox Ghost, sort of, kind of, but it was meant to be, hey, look, we're still excited about this. And it got, thanks to, you know, people like all of you guys and also people internally, got a lot of excitement going. But it was just a figure. It didn't do the illusion. At the same time, I had been playing with a few different techniques to try to kind of pitch this, because one of the best things I found at WDI, and really with anything in life, I'm sure you guys would agree, that when you pitch something and have something physical mocked up, whether it's a maquette or a prototype, a working prototype, or something like that, even if it's glued together with hot glue and there's foam core and all that stuff, you get people excited about it versus talking with your hands and all that stuff. People can put it in their hand or look at it and touch it physically and can see it work. And on kind of on my own time and with a few other folks at WDI, we built this working prototype out of really many trips to Home Depot, Michaels, and all of the best places Imagineers like to frequent. I'm not endorsing them, but they're great places. And we built a working prototype. And that was kind of, at least what I saw, as one of the biggest hurdles, is every time this would come up, when people would pitch, let's bring the Hatbox Ghost back, because fans love him. We love him internally to WDI. There's nothing stopping it except this little thing called the effect never worked in the first place. We have to do it right this time. So we pitched it and showed it, again, grassroots effort, to different executives and had people walk around and see it. And it basically created its own project. And the project was then feathered into the 60th anniversary, and it became a real project. I mean, you know, completely surreal for me to become the head illusioneer in charge of bringing him back, and then also kind of in the long run working with painters and the lighting and all the other guys, because everything has to be a symphony when you're doing an illusion like this. If one thing's off, the whole show will go to pieces, to quote, you know, the 10th anniversary Disneyland special.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That, yeah. So it kind of created its own momentum, and we really got excited as a team. Really, I mean, it was a project of passion and love, and that's why I think people, when they see it, can really see that we, from the beginning, wanted to make this this figure and this illusion look analog and look true to the rest of the Haunted Mansion and the 1969, you know, show. It couldn't contrast in that attraction. So I think we did a pretty good job, and we're excited to possibly, I don't know, maybe one day we'll do more. There's a lot of people who say, no, he should live in Disneyland because he was only ever in Disneyland. And yes, that is true. But there's also an and to that story, because the way Wed was making things back then, they made all the figures and everything for the Haunted Mansion at the same time they made them for Walt Disney World's Haunted Mansion, which opened a year later. And that being said, there were two Hatbox Ghosts. And Yale Gracie, as far as I understood himself, made the call to pull the original one out because it didn't live up to his original illusion that was mocked up in Glendale. And it was sitting in his office down at, I don't know if it was in Glendale or in Anaheim, but there were two Hatbox Ghost figures in there. And they eventually, you know, got decommissioned, and are probably, screws and nuts and bolts of them are in different parts of the Haunted Mansion today. But technically there was going to be a Hatbox Ghost in Florida, so that was the plan. So who knows what'll happen in the future.
That, Tony, were you ever working with, during that time, did you ever see anything that was going on with the Hatbox Ghost, especially with Florida when that was going on?
Well, like I said, we were lucky enough to get to go on the ride, and then, you know, you try to record in your brain everything that you saw, you know, and I remember when we would get as ride operators to the Adam Leota area, you could yell across the people that were in front of you and behind you and say, did you see this? The next time around, watch for that, and so forth. So there was a lot of chit-chat like that going on. And it's funny, I just saw at a sale, they had a poster for that night for employees, and it went for thousands of dollars. It was hanging up in our punch-the-clock area.
Yeah.
But one thing that, you know, for years and years, I was kind of an advocate of this figure, and everybody looked at me kind of, sure, they saw the pictures of Yale Gracie that was published a lot in the annual reports and so forth, but as for it being in the park, I got a lot of criticism about maybe I was making that up. And one of our people that works at Disneyland, Roberta Brubaker, who is probably the walking fountain of knowledge about all things Disneyland, came to me one day and she says, I think I found something that you're going to find really, really interesting, and I brought it with me today. This is a card that the maintenance workers back in the analog days, when they didn't check it off on their smartphone, would check to make sure they had looked at everything in the attic. And here, well, he isn't called by the same name, he's called Ghost Hatbox. So, see, we've been pronouncing it wrong all these years. But he is clearly there. And so that was our first real record that something physical existed. And then when, not too long ago, about 5 years, a 8mm movie in horrible, you know, shape, because it was so dark in there, showed up, where you can make out clearly the form of the Hatbox in the attic, and it was located as you're just about to go out onto the balcony. It was located on the right side, and there are still, as you said, there are bolts there.
There are, and I in the dark tripped over them a few times. But looking down, you can see the actual base plate and the foundation bolt where the figure originally was, which the chest is.
And you might wonder why we moved it outside onto the, you know, onto the balcony itself. But this was a couple years before we got real hot and heavy on it. We did a little mock-up. And one of the things that always bothered me is as you left the attic, you were aware of the ceiling of the room that the graveyard was in. And you went out onto that balcony, and there were ghosts going up the wall and then across the ceiling. And I thought, if we could distract you at that point and give you something better to look at. So John Gritz did a mock-up, and that was where we thought we would put, you know, your little guy in there. We were going to do that right there. So, but that never came through. So I was thrilled when you guys did it, and you put it in the place we had.
Yeah. So you guys put it right in the spot where it was supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. And that, like I said before, there were several attempts at doing it. Some got farther than others. I think the one you guys did with John Gritz probably got the farthest, and then ours got, finally, with the help of yours, got a little bit farther and we got it in.
We also have to give a big handout here to Merchandise, who it went off the charts. That character is just light years more popular than any other character in the ride. And I think then Guillermo doing the, you know, chills for it at both Comic-Cons that he went to.
So yeah.
This is going to be the centerpiece of this. I think a lot of people started saying, what is it about this character? What is it that he has this charisma?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you actually have a video here of the new Hatbox Ghost in action, right?
I believe so, yes.
All right. If we could go ahead and watch the video there.
When the Great North Creek and the Tombstones quake, Happy Haunts to the Fairy Ride.
We are at Walt Disney Imagineering in Glendale, and this is the staging area for our Hatbox Ghost figure. The Hatbox Ghost is one of the original 999 Happy Haunts in the mansion. Sometime around the opening, he disappeared and has been missing from the mansion for the past 45 years. And so for the Disneyland Diamond Celebration, we thought it was a wonderful opportunity to bring him home to the mansion. Despite the fact that the Hatbox Ghost hasn't been in the mansion since around opening day in 1969, he has a cult following. There is a ton of fans for the Hatbox Ghost. He's one of the most popular figures in the mansion and doesn't even exist there.
It was originally installed in 1969, so we have a few different and new tricks up our sleeves. But at the same time, we're using a lot of the fundamental tricks and illusions that our forefathers like Yale Gracie and Mark Davis had pushed out in the original figure. Yale Gracie and his role in the original Haunted Mansion was pretty massive. He was the illusioneer behind all of the fun gags and all of the fun illusions that went through the Haunted Mansion. We enjoy these things to this day and still don't even know how they're done.
We have very few pieces of reference for the original Hatbox Ghost figure. We had a couple of images from here at Imagineering and one piece of artwork from Mark Davis, and we use those very carefully to inspire his look for today.
Guests, when they travel by on their Doom Buggy and see the modern Hatbox Ghost, will see something that was really the original intent of our Imagineers back in 1969. When they go by, the Hatbox Ghost will be looming at them, and then his head will fully disappear from the top of his shoulders and then reappear back into his hatbox. And then, as they're going by, they'll see right before their eyes, like a magic trick, the head disappear from the hatbox and appear right on the top of the shoulders again.
Well, I love the opportunity to be able to go into his attractions and be able to, as he says, plus them up. And add new magic back into existing attractions. And we are excited to be able to continue that today here at Imagineering.
It looks pretty good. Thank you. All right, so, I mean, Tony, I mean, overall, it's really just the Hatbox Ghost is a piece of just our fascination, really, with Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, I mean, the whole concept, you know, of the Haunted Mansion, growing up in that decade, yeah.
By the way, that's Tim Burton.
Yeah.
One of my favorite directors ever.
Nothing
I'm not
there
jealous
has,
at all of that.
You know, actually, Darth Vader does look a lot like the Hatbox Ghost. Other than that, you know, I remember when Steve Davidson was playing around with the idea of doing a Haunted Mansion tribute. They were talking about the night before Christmas, the little fairy tale or poem. And I said, well, we've got this property, and they go, well, how would we get the rights to that and all that? And I said, why not ask, you know? And so it just seems like a natural now, but literally the first storyboards I saw were, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house, you know, and there was no weird kinkiness to it at all. So that's what that one is about, and the other was when I got the Legend Award. So enough about me, and back to...
Wait a minute, you're a Disney legend?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's my microphone.
I won't comment about, like, who's on my side there and who's on Bob Iger's side, but...
Original Hatbox?
The original one, so somebody actually got a snap. That isn't from that movie, is it?
No, this is this is a photo that, actually, it's a guy we know, Paul Clements, took this. His mother was an actress who was invited to one of those press previews. And so he was a little kid and filmed and photographed this shot, just a total stroke of luck.
And, you know, the thing that was amazing to me was everything in the Haunted Mansion was new. You had never seen it before.
Yeah.
So you had to, like, comprehend the guy trying to get out of the coffin in the conservatory, Madame Leota, the, you know, 50 figures or so that were coming from every direction in the ballroom, everything popping out of the hats, the singing bus, the hitchhiking ghost, the, you know, mirror reflection at the end, all of those things were brand new and something that was being added into the brain. So, like, to signal out one and then say, I'm not going to be able to see that after this week, so I better pay a lot of attention to it. That just didn't happen. So, you know, during that week, it was a great opportunity. And I sensed something was missing. And probably I have more knowledge of what it looked like from all the Yale Gracie photos than I do of what, you know, we experienced in the ride, other than there was a blank space. They tried to rearrange the furniture. Originally, the bride was on that side, replacing the Hatbox Ghost. She had been over in the corner where we added the piano about 10, 15 years ago. That was where the bride originally was, and then it flipped over and you looked at the Hatbox Ghost, and then you went out on the balcony. So when they removed him, it was not only that he was removed, but there was this... Now the bride is over on the other side. So that was, you know, a distraction, made it more obvious. But we never really knew. I assumed it was going to go back in. And I figured when we got to Florida, we'd see the new fixed version, because as Daniel said, I was down in Florida during the last 9 months. I was 22 years old, and they sent me down there, and I couldn't believe it. And the best thing about the Haunted Mansion was it was finished when I got there in April, and they had locked the door, because it was literally the one ride that they had built twice. And the one at Disneyland opened in August of 2009. That was the highest attendance in Disneyland's history, that Saturday that this ride opened, because for almost 7 or 8 years, all of us kids had come up to that fence and said, "We're still out gathering ghosts for this ride." So it was a real...
That's great marketing.
Yeah, it was great marketing. It was 7 years of a marketing campaign. So I figured, when I got down there, and the first thing I did was waited until... They kept it locked because it was done. They locked the doors and kept the air conditioning on, and that was done. But occasionally someone would go in there to tweak. You'd look over, "Oh, my God, the door's open." So... No Hatbox Ghost. So, I thought maybe they would have figured out whatever didn't work in it. I mean, I didn't know what the illusion originally was going to be. But obviously, I think what Daniel said is the clue. Some of the grand effects that are done in there need space, and they need distance from the guest. And to try to apply those effects at a close range would probably be near impossible, especially with a really broad angle that you pass by. You were looking straight on, then you went directly to the side, and then if you wanted to, you could kind of look back. Where we gave you the spot now, it's a little hard to do that. You see them, and then you move away, so it's actually maybe helped you a little bit. I don't know.
And we actually moved the cam bar just a little bit, so you're cheated to watch him a little bit more.
Well, I'm glad they let you do that. If you know what that is, there's a cam that follows the track, and that directs the movement of the Doom Buggy to the left or to the right. And so it was programmed to just go straight out and look out at the graveyard and then move and then go down. And so what Daniel's saying is they cheated it, so it goes a little bit that way and then goes back. So that's good. Thank you for doing that. I learned something new.
So overall, Hatbox Ghost is now back. It's finally, it's no longer a mystery. Disney's embraced the Hatbox Ghost. Kevin and Jody, for you guys just being fans and always making replicas and modeling, I mean, what do you think about this now that it's actually here now that you can see it every day?
Our first thought was, finally. It just seems like such an obvious thing. I'm so glad the planets finally came to alignment and it happened. He was really missing, so it's really great to have him back.
But now we have to find something else to be inspired to.
Yeah. Sex over. Now you need to find another mysterious character out of Disneyland lore.
I'm sure they're out there.
There is a big mystery still about the Hatbox Ghost, and that resides, I think, in Guillermo's mind. Because we know that it's the character that he cares the most about. And now we've done our part of the bargain. He's now in the Haunted Mansion. So come on, Guillermo, let's make this movie.
Yes. So I guess we're split. I don't know how much time we have left, but open up to Q&A here. Does anybody have any questions to our great panel?
I see you.
Yeah, can you? Does somebody have one? Okay, here it is. Awesome, all right, here we go. Right here in the front. Yeah, it's really...
I could probably yell it.
Yeah. There we go.
Are there any plans for the Hatbox Ghost for Haunted Mansion Holiday?
What was that again?
Are there any plans for the Hatbox Ghost during Haunted Mansion Holiday?
The run around the mansion hallway?
To be still at the mansion during the holiday?
Yeah.
Overlay? As of now, yes, he's going to stay exactly where he is. We're talking about how to subtly make him, kind of a part of that universe. But one of the important things that we as a little team kind of decided is he's part of the Haunted Mansion universe, and he's just visiting maybe that world. So he's not necessarily going to become like a Jack Skellington or anything like that with his head disappearing. It's the Hatbox Ghost was there, and all of a sudden Jack Skellington kind of ran amok.
With the Hatbox Ghost being new technology that you guys use, could we possibly see other parts of the Haunted Mansion updated with new technology? Maybe other ghosts changing or anything like that?
Well, I think the important thing to understand is we at Imagineering try to, and I know I try to, whenever I do illusions, to use the technology completely as a tool and a means, not an ends. And actually, in the case of Hatbox Ghost, we kind of made him, there is a lot of new technology in him, but the core of the technology was going way back to the analog, the original. And actually, we probably used the same tool that you guys pulled that mold off of, which says Hitchhiker/Hatbox, and it's this plaster mold that's like really old and decrepit, but wonderful. I mean, it's amazing we still have this in the company. And I had that 3D scanned in our WDI model shop, and then I went to our WDI library and got a bunch of reference pictures of him that had surfaced a bunch of years ago in the 90s. And those really high resolution, there were scans from slides and documentation of the figure before he went to Disneyland, were mapped in 3D on top of the 3D model of the face. And the point of doing all this extra work versus we could just go into a 3D program, sculpt it, paint it in 3D, and we're done. But that doesn't have Blaine Gibson's fingerprints in it. It doesn't have, I'm not sure if the painter who painted it, but the brush strokes, because in that actual 3D model, you can see, literally, you can see fingerprints, you can see fingernail kind of pressings. And you can see
we're all like scoping it up.
Yeah.
He's right.
You can see what I thought was the most important part, where the painter had gone through and painted things and then painted some over again, so there were areas where the paint dried not evenly. And this kept completely analog with what we were going with that matches the rest of the mansion. So that all that technology was purely to serve something that didn't look high-tech. So I guess to answer your question, the long and the short, if it serves the look of the rest of the mansion, I would say we'll add some new technology. But if it doesn't, then it's not welcome in the Haunted Mansion, in my opinion.
I would just make a caveat on that. I got to sit in on a really interesting technology seminar last week on robotics and so forth. And I think there are so many tools that are becoming available, and as Daniel says, they have to be implemented as Walt did, all the way back to the black and white going to color and film and sound going to stereo and so forth. The widescreens that we just put into Soaring, we replaced that film with a digital technology. If you've been on the original Soaring ride and the new one, you'll see night and day the improvement in that show. So. This robotics thing was interesting because it frees you up from a lot of the oil technologies that we've used in the past, and I'm very excited about all the possibilities that can come with where the company is going.
The Disney geek in me is just freaking out right now.
Do we have another question?
Hi. So I just had a question about the bride. In the original concept, I know the bride was a victim of a, I don't know, murder or suicide, but now she's malevolent and she's evil, and I just wonder if you guys were ever kind of like, do you regret that, or do you kind of like the new bride, or are we going to ever do anything about that? I like the original story, so I'm just curious, so.
You guys have no connection, so go ahead and say it.
So I can just give my opinion?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I really love, you know, I love the old bride, the bride from my childhood. Really because, you know, I understand, you know, effects are really cool and everything, but the old bride had so much mystery to me. I just remember as a kid riding through and seeing, you know, she's so different from all the other ghosts in the attraction, and so I remember asking my mom about her, and my mom said, well, she's a really sad ghost, and she haunts her wedding dress, because something very sad must have happened, and so she's haunting that dress. that just went right into my head, and I thought, that is the most amazing. A ghost could haunt clothes, you know? I just love that whole idea, and I just, because there wasn't such an obvious story for, you know, told about her, I loved being able to invent my own terrible, scary, frightening story with my imagination of what happened to her on her wedding day. So anyway, I just love that, but that's just me.
Well, Brides and my connections to go hand in hand, because we changed the whole thing completely in Europe, and we really featured her. And when we started that ride, the development of the attraction, we thought, let's sort of feature the story around the bride, make her the Miss Havisham of the whole piece. So it's this girl who giddily at the beginning is looking forward to her wedding celebration. And we pass through the ride going to the ballroom where it's to unfold, but the groom is only making kind of illusionary appearances at that point in time. And then finally we get up to the attic where years are passing by and she's growing older and older and older. And so it has this very macabre thing. And where we came down from it, a lot of people have been bothered that it's a little too horrific compared to the other ones. But when we went into Europe, we saw that they liked things that were comedic, and they really liked things that were scary. But comedy scary was something that wasn't really on the wavelength over there. So we opted for the more scary. And so the last time we see her at the end of that ride, she's nothing but a skeleton at that point in time and kind of reaching out of a vortex at the end of the ride. So anyway, that was kind of an exercise. It's funny because a lot of people don't get it in over there, and a lot of people write their own stories. And if you go online, you'll see 50 stories about this bride, you know, variations on it. And I think I read somewhere in general about attractions. They're better when you leave some room for the guests to write their own story. As you just said, with your mom telling you that she was sad. And there's an aspect of that in this bride, too, that, you know, she forlornly lived her whole life in this kind of house of scary things, you know, and so forth. But, you know, I think if you make it too pat, it becomes a book report, and you really want it to be something that's interpretive, and that gives it life everlasting, as they say.
Yeah. No, I miss the heartbeat, I have to say.
Yeah, I do too.
That heartbeat always is something special. Awesome. Okay, so a couple more questions.
I know you guys have some apparitions in the ballroom fading in and out, but how about doing some really 3D type, maybe walking in the hallways as we're coming in, or at night, like materializing in the graveyard outside?
Well, I think that a lot of that happens after the guests leave anyway. I swear, I saw some of that.
There's all these ghosts that are dressed in blue outfits that have rags and mops and everything. Great. But honestly, we had... Does anyone in the audience remember the night inside the mansion? Yeah. So we did. We had a live character. There's one audiometronic night as you look down the endless corridor, and we put a second one there as a pair. So that, you know, you get this regular kind of sense about what audiometronics do. And so you're prepared for certain gestures and so forth. And then all of a sudden this dude just launches right out of the car. And it really, you know, most people, I would say if you did a chart, like 90% of the people loved it. But some were just absolutely terrorized to the point of that ruined their day. And then we actually had some aggressive folks who just punched the night right back. I said, that's it. I'm not going to do that again.
Awesome. So one more question.
Hello, guys. As you know, Box Hat Ghost has been, you know, gone for 50 years, and you guys brought it out, and we all appreciate it, loved it. But my question is, because it had so many complications back then, which is why they took it out, did you guys have any complications with it at all? And if you did, what was the hardest part for you guys individually?
Oh, to bring the current one back?
Yeah, because you know how when it's been gone for so long, so I can imagine when you get the approval of getting something, you're all excited. And when you're working in a team, like at school, when you're set with a partner,
your ideas collide, or, you know, you don't know, no, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Did you guys have that at all, or were there any parts of the project where you guys have difficulties in, like, you know, with the effects of it or anything at all?
Well, as with, I think, any creative project that happens, and I'm sure, you know, Tony can attest to, there's no shortage of that, you know, WDI or any other, you know, company for that matter. But this project, as I said, for me was really unique because the team, from the sculptor to the mechanical engineer to our fabricator that built it, you know, the whole thing was built, designed, engineered, built in-house, which was an amazing effort. And the whole team, this was a passion project for everyone. That helped kind of smooth things along in a way of efficiency that I've not had to that extent on a Disney project in my, you know, short 8 or 9 years at WDI. That being said, there was a bunch of technological hurdles, of course, because everything, I think people don't really necessarily realize everything that we put into the parks as Imagineers is a prototype. It's kind of something that's never been done before. And this was had no shortage of that. So we're basically wringing out how to do it while we're making the final one that's going in. Which, as you can tell, having a parallel path like that is really, really stressful and hard. But again, because this was completely done in-house at WDI, and it was such an integrated effort, it was like we were finishing each other's sentences, and I really just had a ball. I mean, it was really a lot of fun doing this project. And I hope it's a sign of, you know, many more of those efforts to come, where it's something that the park really needs and something that the company really is pushing, but also internally, something that we really are super, super passionate and excited about. It's just the that's the magic.
Hope you enjoyed that. Coming up in future episodes, I'll be sharing more of the amazing panels that focused on the Haunted Mansion, including probably my favorite panel the entire weekend. It was called Disembodied Spirits, Voiceover Experts. It included Corey Burton, the voice of the ghost host from Haunted Mansion Holiday, and the current voice of Captain Hook, Mark Silverman, the voice of Rod Sterling on Tower of Terror, and Peter Renaday, the voice of the ghost host on the Haunted Mansion record. What an incredible panel. It was amazing. And I'll be sharing that real soon with you guys, I promise. I also just want to say another thing about Scare LA, which, in case you're unfamiliar with what it is, it's a convention that focuses on the haunt industry and also a little bit of horror and Halloween culture as well. And I've been to a lot of conventions and functions, whether it be Disney events, podcasting events, horror conventions. I have never seen so much creepy Disney love at anything ever than at Scare LA this weekend. It was absolutely incredible. All the panels that featured Haunted Mansion, all the Haunted Mansion merchandise and inspired art, the people there that loved it, and every person I talked to about Creepy Kingdom that never heard about it before was super excited about it. And it was, Scare LA was definitely one of the best conventions I've ever been to in my life. It was absolutely incredible. So I highly recommend, and I'm not being endorsed, they're not sponsoring the show, but next year, when they've already announced the dates, you gotta go. If you love creepy Disney stuff, that's where it's at. It's not at the D23 Expo. Unfortunately, it should be, but it's not. It's at Scarily. We're going to catch up on listener email real soon. We have received your messages, and they've been lovely. Just want to wait until we have more people or our round table on so we can all chime in on these wonderful messages you have sent us. But if you have something you would like to send to us, and you haven't already, just shoot us an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you'd like to check out our other podcast, Curvy Cutie Chat, Steve and James the Podcast, and Roxy's World, you can do so by going to monstermoviemedia.com. And for show notes, creepy Disney cosplay and fan art pictures, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest. All you need to do is go to creepykingdom.com. Well, you better go to the premiere of The Dark Side of Disney if you are anywhere in the vicinity of Santa Ana, California, August 16th, 4:30, the Frida Cinema, 10 minutes from Disneyland. Be there and keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.
Ha 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 ha